Sorry, yeah, I'm a bit quiet. I'm going to be like, it's quiet time, voice time for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my wife's left me.
Oh, no.
She's left me for good.
She's left you for good?
Yeah, to do like a good thing. She's like, what? For the concept of good, you know, she's left for something that's good.
Oh.
Sorry.
She's coming back.
That's what I keep telling the kids.
Right.
She said she would.
Okay. She's left for good. Like, she's doing good when she's out there.
Yeah, for herself.
But she's coming back.
Yeah.
Okay.
It feels like it happens quite a lot that she leaves me.
You do say it a lot that she's left you.
I don't make it up when she's left me. She has left me.
Yeah.
But I think it's just the tides of when we've recorded the podcast.
Yeah. She tends to have left at that point.
It's deceptive, is what I mean.
Right.
Deceptive, the amount that she leaves me. It's a perfectly reasonable amount of time to be left.
Well, I mean, by your definition, my wife leaves me every morning. I mean,
well, yeah, and you could start a podcast by talking about that. If I let you let in, if I let you get in a word edgeways.
Yeah, well,
I'm leaving my wife in a couple of weeks, aren't I? I've got it booked in the calendar. I'm going to leave my wife.
A premeditated leaving.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you going to have an affair?
No, I'm just going away and then I'll come back.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think it's always funny when I say it, and then I say it to people at work, or I say it to dads on the school run, and they all just look baffled when I...
this isn't just a podcast bit. You use this in your real life as well.
Oh, yeah, no, of course.
I WhatsApped
it to English Ricky. I WhatsApped it to English Ricky. I said, oh, sorry, I can't read this. Look at this crossword that you've just sent me. My wife's left me. And he knows me very well and my wife. And then he just went, what? He seemed genuinely. And I said, oh, no, that's just a funny joke.
Oh,
and he said, oh, I thought
the
I was
boy
gonna...
who cried, wife has left me. It's going to be years before we realize, you know, we thought the you living in a bedsit thing was just part of the bit. You know,
the boy who cried, my wife has left me. That's a horrible story. Horrible fable. Very modern fable.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very modern fable. Absolutely.
But yeah, so put the kids to bed. I did have the day off work. I've had a little bit of time to myself, but it's intense from three to now.
Bit of you time.
But then from three onwards to now, it's been, you know, on, dinner, playing, chat.
Right.
But like, very fulfilling.
Fathering,
edified.
Yeah. Edifying fathering.
Edifying, reading stories, engaging. But it does mean now.
Just being present, being there.
Yeah. But now it's whisper time.
Whisper time.
My older one isn't probably quite nodded off. She's listening to Harry Potter as we speak.
Oh, what, is she listening to Fry Potter or is it Modern Potter?
Oh, Fry Potter.
Fry Potter, yeah.
That's what's Modern Potter?
I don't know, I thought maybe there was another Potter, but it's always just Fry Potter, is it?
Oh, it's Fry. She's on Sorting Hat. The chapter on Sorting Hat.
What, in
Abbott Hanna?
In Fry 1?
That must be. Has she got Sorting Hat chapters in other of her books? You can't have more than one Sorting Hat.
The Sorting Hat sort of comes back at various times. I think it even makes a speech one year.
Yeah, but to call the chapter Sorting Hat again.
Well, I think it's not beyond JK, is it? It's not beyond her to do that.
What isn't? What else isn't beyond her?
I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't.
I don't know. I don't know how to respond. I'm trialing something. It's called anti-cancel bot. Whenever anyone says anything to me where I'm like unsure, I just go, I'm sorry, I do not compute, I cannot respond. And then people say, no wonder his wife left him, you know? That sort of thing.
What do you think of this Andrew Tate character?
Does
not compute.
I have never been to Romania.
That feels like a fairly easy answer.
Well, this is
fair.
The problem, though, isn't it? Because as soon as you start saying, well, no, because Andrew Tate's easy, so you wouldn't need the robot, therefore, the implication is that you're saying that JK isn't easy. And then the robot hasn't helped you at all, because the robot, then it's like you're only doing it for things that you kind of agree with, but you don't want to say you agree with. And I don't think that's what you were saying about JK. But I think that's what it sounded like you were saying. And that's why you just have to use the robot for everything. Even stuff that isn't cancelable. It's not just, you don't just bring it up when it's like, hey, what do you think of Louis C.K.? You use the robot then. But then also when someone says, what did you do at the weekend? You say, I don't know. Well, please do not engage me in a human conversation, you know?
Although to be fair, this bit that you're doing now,
yeah,
it sounds like you're basically saying you can't say anything anymore.
It does sound
these
like
days.
That, doesn't it?
It sounds like you've invented a bit, a robot bit, to make a deeper point about how you can't say anything anymore these days.
It does. Do you want to hear something that happened to me today, Adam?
Yeah. So you've got a robot who also interjects and stops
comedy
conversations as well.
Robot decided bored of... Robot said, more of me, please. More of robot. You know?
Okay. Yeah. Quick.
Is it still funny for me to
on.
Keep doing it? I won't do it the whole time.
No, but like, just tell the story.
Today.
No. Just change the topic and now tell your story that you were going to do.
I had a mini, quote, mini endoscopy today. Do you know what an endoscopy is?
I don't actually.
So, do you know what a colonoscopy is?
Yeah, so that's bum.
Colonoscopy's up the bum, which I've had before a couple of times. Tell you what, not so bad.
The other way's going to be down the mouth, right?
Yeah, down the
or up the nose.
Up the nose. I think you can have both, down the mouth or up the nose and then down the mouth. I had up the nose and down the throat today, and it's a little lubricated and numb. So they sprayed a little numbing agent up both of the old nostrils there, and then they feed in the camera tube, you know, it's only very small, and even though it's numb, you can still feel it there. I only had it down to my larynx because I've had a bit of a throat problem. Seems I'm probably fine, you know, thank the stars. But it was extremely unpleasant to have it. I didn't like it at all. But the reason I say it, Adam, is because I expect colonoscopy, endoscopy, having a camera pumped in you somewhere or another is something that probably most people have to experience at some point in their life. And I feel as though when these things happen to me, it's something of a public duty for me to talk about them on a podcast so that I can reassure people that have these things coming up or will have these things in the future that they're actually fine and that they're not as scary as they seem. So that's my intention for bringing it up.
Hi, and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast. Oh, hey, how's it going?
Oh, pretty okay, man. How are you?
Yeah, fine. This is the show in which we, and when I say we, I mean me and my big pal, Joe. My big pal? He's a big pal. He's a big pal of mine. He's not just
I'm big in your life, but I'm also big in my life and in the physical space.
Yeah, he takes up a lot of room.
I fill
we
a room.
We talk about the movies or films that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place.
Mm.
That's just the premise of the show.
Yeah.
On today's episode, we are doing the 2017 Sir Christopher Nolan directed flick.
Oh, Sir Christopher.
Dunkirk.
Yeah.
He also wrote it. Of course he wrote it. Based on the war landing of the same name.
Oh my God. How could you be so disrespectful?
Based on the war landing of the same name.
Yeah.
We will land on the beaches. It's not called We Will Land on the Beaches. It's called Dunkirk.
I'm surprised you went for war landing and not like evacuation. They weren't landing. They were leaving.
God, all right. I don't
know.
The
whole film is them trying to leave.
Yeah, but do you know what? Because the film is so intense, I didn't really know whether they were coming nor going.
No, yeah.
Neither.
I didn't know whether I was
sorry,
coming
hang on a
or
sec.
Going.
I didn't know whether they were neither coming nor going.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Here is the Letterboxd. When 400,000 men couldn't get home, Home came for them. Came the story of the miraculous evacuation of Allied soldiers from Belgium, Britain, Canada and France, who were cut off and surrounded by the German army from the beaches and harbour of Dunkirk between May 26th and June 4th, 1940, during World War II. Now that's a letterboxed that will get you hard.
Yeah.
It stars Finn Whitehead, Tom Hardy, Mark Rylance. You won't recognise Tom Hardy because he's got a mask on his face, a la Bane. Uh-huh. Ken Branagh, really over-egging the puddin'.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy, actually. Mm-hmm. Cillian Murphy, Barry Keoghan.
A bit more Cillian Murphy in this film, though.
Harry Styles, stinking the joint up. Uh-huh. And then also a Jack Loudon, who people might recognise now from Old Stinky Slow Horses.
Right.
And obviously Hans Zimmer is on strings. Hans Zimmer is zimmering it right up.
Yeah, I mean, he's the main character of the film, one could argue.
You could and you would. Now, Joe, this is part of our history.
Yes.
You and me, we saw this at the IMAX together in 2017, in the good old days.
One of four films we've seen together.
I fucking loved it when in the IMAX. Sent shivers right through me, and then I never really thought of it ever again. You came out, you said you had a panic attack years later, and I didn't even notice.
I had a lot of panic that I was going to have a panic attack, and that was partly to do with the fact that I was a little stressed at the time, and that we were in the IMAX, the Waterloo IMAX in London, which has a very, I mean, I'm sure all the IMAXs do have very steep seating, and we were in the middle, so there was sort of no way out, and the screen came on, and the noise kind of sent, vibrations through my body, and I thought, I'm going to have a panic attack. So the first sort of 5 minutes of the film was me surreptitiously doing some deep breathing in order to calm down, before then being subjugated to, as one reviewer called it, incredibly fucking stressful film for an hour and 45 minutes.
Well, the film starts fantastically. You start in, like, something has just happened. Like, these leaflets are falling on these soldiers.
Yeah. That say, we are surrounding you.
And the beginning, the opening 15 to 20 minutes is about cowardice, or seemingly it's the most, I don't know, the most. I'm going to say things like the most and the best today. And I'm just using them as amplifiers. I don't really, because I haven't seen everything. I can't justify it. So forgive me, everyone. But for a film to be so, for a big blockbuster like this, to be so brazenly, like the characters be so cowardly, is just so unusual. You know, it's just not, you don't get movies like this of this scale, whereby it's about weak little characters who are trying to escape and putting themselves before anyone else. And that's the whole, like, the whole first act. And so I was, like, diving back into it. I was just thinking, fuck, yes, please, Christopher Nolan, who's telling a war movie like this?
Yeah. The film does return to the theme of cowardice so often that I can only assume that it's one of those situations where Chris Nolan and the other people who've created this film have done a lot of reading about it and have realised that the fear of being called a coward actually was one of the kind of most present things in the minds of the soldiers who were returning. And so they've paid dues to that in the making of the film, which you're absolutely right to say is something that I don't think you would see in that many other big budget blockbuster films. There's a great episode of Band of Brothers, which is dedicated to it, but that's obviously TV, even if it's big budget, and that's over 10 hours. So, you know, you have the time to investigate and explore these ideas. And it's the notion of, certainly the notion of PTSD, and they call it shell shock in this film, is what Cillian Murphy is probably suffering with. There's been a lot of films and TV series that have focused on that in war. But you're right. I don't think there have been that many that have focused on the theme of cowardice, however present that actually is, however real that actually is. It's a really interesting choice. And it's the sort of thing you only really pick up in full maybe the second time around as well.
Yeah, it's just another thing I don't think he gets any credit for. I just hear people
Sir Christopher.
Sir Christopher. No, just everyone wants to shit on him. Everyone.
Who wants to shit on him, though?
Listen, we'll get on to that. Let's just do a little bit of nice things about Dunkirk and also not so nice things. It's not a perfect movie.
Sure.
It looks phenomenal. Yeah. I think like, the blues of it are just gorgeous. Yeah. And the scale of it, it's just like, you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
It's just like real and you can touch it. You know, this guy uses a little bit of CGI and he's got planes that are flying up there and you can see him like landing in the sea and he's just got really bleak shots. You've got like a man just like staggering out and like just walking into the sea.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's absolutely, the film is absolutely horrifying.
It's horrible. But at the same time, it's an hour and 10 minutes, and I paused it when it happened, an hour and 10 minutes of just sheer cowardice, what men will do to save their own skin.
Rising damp, you know, creeping fucking horror.
Horror, horror, horror. The score, I'll jump back, but maybe it's about half an hour in when they're on, they finally got on to Finn Whitehead and Harry Styles and his other pal, who turns out to be French, they've managed to sneak onto a boat that's leaving, and it instantly manages to get hit by a torpedo and starts sinking. The score that kicks in at that point, for the first time, it sounds synthy. Do you know what I mean? It kind of sounds like
droney. Yeah,
it's so intense. The beat is unbelievable. And they're all going to drown.
Well, the famous thing about the score in this film was the shepherd tone, wasn't it?
Oh, is this where the shepherd tone was?
I'm sure it's been used in other films, and I don't know that this was the first time, but I believe I read at the time that Hans Zimmer had underlaid a shepherd tone throughout almost the entire film. And a shepherd tone is the technical term for a specific type of melody that sounds as though it creates an auroral illusion. It sounds as though it's continually rising, even though it's not. And apparently it's laid under big chunks of the film, so that for that whole first hour and 10 minutes where the horror and the scenes are happening in front of you, the tension of the film is just building, 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 so quietly that you might not necessarily notice it in there amongst the score, but it's there, and it's very clear. It's deliberately designed to increase the rate at which this is making you feel uncomfortable until you get beautiful moments of bliss and crescendo and relaxation, and maybe we'll talk about those in a minute, but some of those scenes are great.
An hour and 10 minutes in, you almost have a pullback reveal. And finally, you see the boats. You've been stuck on one boat, one of the three stories. We haven't even told we haven't even chatted about how the film is structured.
Mm.
But Mark Rylance and his son and Barry Keoghan.
Mm-hmm.
Keegan? I think it's Keoghan.
I say Keegan, but maybe it's Keoghan, yeah.
I think you can say Keoghan. They're coming over on one of these boats, and it feels like they're the only boat coming over.
Yeah.
And then an hour and 10 minutes in, you have this pullback reveal, and the music soars almost like a kind of, it's a very British, Benjamin Britten type orchestral moment of like, the boats are coming, and the relief and the joy. And I thought at the time, like, oh, this is a bit patriotic. But rewatching it, I was thinking, you've earned this, Nolan.
Yeah.
You've earned this.
Well, also, you know, do you know what? Like, I had that feeling as well. Sometimes and maybe this will be a bit, sound a bit different to listeners who aren't from the UK. So I'll try to explain, yeah?
Explain what it's like to be a horrible little Englishman.
Right, okay. So I am a horrible little, I'm quite a horrible big Englishman. Horrible little Englander, as they say. And obviously, as it is the case with many countries, but perhaps none such, England at least.
What are you saying?
I'm saying England has like an absolutely horrific colonial history of devastating the rest of the world, right?
Oh, that's not also my problem. What?
No, I'm saying there's a deeper history there, build up to, and then a kind of a cultural attitude. Anyway, the point I was making was that air quote modern, progressive, liberal Englanders sometimes experience a bit of confusion about patriotism because we're not particularly patriotic, and people in the UK or in England who are patriotic sometimes a little suspect, you know what I'm saying? There's some other stuff in there. People who today think England's the greatest, yeah, that's, there's something wrong there.
To translate, well, this is what I think what Joe's saying,
yeah,
is that I equate English people who are patriotic, I equate that to they're probably a bit racist.
Yes.
He's not saying that.
Sure.
That's what I think.
I'm dancing around it.
I think that's what I would assume and think if someone was very proud of this country.
If it's not a World Cup and you've got if there's a St. George's flag in your window.
If it's especially a World Cup.
No. During a World Cup, a soccer tournament, it's fine to have an England flag out the window. That's fine. If there's not a World Cup going on.
No.
And you've got an England flag in your window.
Yeah.
That house lives a racist. Yeah. That's the assumption. And in some cases, it may be true. It's hard to know. I'm trying not to be prejudiced about it, but that is an assumption that many modern people.
Where the cup that holds the blood of Jesus Christ resides forever.
The Holy Grail, Dr. Jones. The chalice used by Christ during the Last Supper. The cup that caught his blood at the crucifixion and was entrusted to Joseph of
the Arthur legend. I heard this bedtime story before.
Eternal life, Dr. Jones. Eternal life, 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 eternal life.
Point is, as and when big sort of historical triumphant English, very English moments come up, some of us, I include myself in this number, find it difficult to not A, be cynical, B, to fully enjoy it, right? And this is where I think Dunkirk does a bit of a masterstroke. Not only does it earn the right to display what at the time was a sense of patriotism, it does so in such a way that allows you to see that the display of patriotism is really just a veneer, that the patriotism element of that is the veneer. What's actually happening here is that on the brink of total war, people whose sons and brothers and whoever are fighting, are just an hour away on the other side of the sea, have taken it upon themselves in some cases to go into a very dangerous war zone in order to bring the people that they live amongst back home together. And if they didn't do that, even though they're not well equipped to do that and not trained to do that, then all of those people would have died, right? There's something beautiful about that. There's something that has nothing to do with England, has nothing to do with notions of being English. It doesn't matter what country that is. It wouldn't matter who it was if it's the loved ones, family and friends, community members coming to bring people back home to be together. There's something wonderful about that. And that's why the story of the evacuation of Dunkirk has gripped people for decades and decades since the war. Even before this was turned into a film, Dunkirk was something that many, many people in England knew about, and was taught in schools and is this symbol of love and hopefulness and togetherness and community and unity, you know, and that's detached from political ideology and from nationalism, even if it wasn't at the time.
It is in this movie, particularly because Nolan has spent an hour and 10 minutes saying, look at these English soldiers, look at everything that they will do to save their skin. Mm-hmm. And like anyone would.
Yeah.
You're in it with Finn Whitehead. Yeah. Everything he does, even though he's running away, he's got integrity, and at the same time, he's very, very scared.
Yeah.
But so when you have when you've got this hour and 10 minute moment of all the boats, you're not thinking, oh, this is a very English thing. This is something only the English would do. You'd have to be willfully ignoring the hour and 10 minutes before where you've watched Englishmen be pretty horrible and weak and cowardly. This is not a film that's kind of bragging about a particular thing of a national character. And I don't know, anyone who comes after it on that basis is a fucking idiot. And they did. I think people were saying it at the time. And I because I was so overwhelmed from the sensory experience of it, I just would dismiss anyone having a go at Nolan. I just didn't engage with it. But I think people have and do dismiss this as a patriotic exercise. They can fuck off. But it's not a great film because also the dialogue is a bit tin-eared and not great. And like Mark Rylance is a bit fucking annoying. And also, why is Harry Styles in it? You've gone. Joe's gone. I've lost the connection. Oh, Joe. I said that whole thing and he didn't hear any of it. It was a really staring moment as well. Fuck's sake.
So here's my question to you about the film Dunkirk, Adam. Okay, it's a hugely engrossing cinematic experience. There are absolutely beautiful moments, aka when the boats arrive, the scene where Tom Hardy's engine gives out and he glides silently over the soldiers on Dunkirk. I think that's just an exceptional film moment. It gets your heart pumping. It means something. It matters. There are some really good actors in it. In theory, it ticks every box. And like you, when we went to go and see it at the IMAX together, I left thinking that's a really, really great film. And yet, it doesn't feel wrong for us to be talking about it on the Movies You Forgot podcast. So my question is, how does a film that ticks all of those boxes and is a good film end up being so forgettable?
It's a great question. I think maybe, is it partly that it's so overwhelming that part of you has to shut down and say, I don't want to keep this in my heart.
Yeah.
I don't want to bang this movie on the way I want to bang on Goodfellas.
No. I never want to watch it again.
And I totally get that. Thing is, I think I would want to watch this again because the finale where all the three storylines are kind of dovetailing together. You got Finn Whitehead is been in a boat with Harry Styles et al.
Mm-hmm. Soldiers trying to escape.
There's oil all over the water, and you've got Mark Rylance and his son in their little skipper boat, and they're picking out all these soldiers that are covered in the oil, and then you've got Tom Hardy's flying up in his plane, and the score is going and going and going. And the time is ticking. You hear it ticking, and the boat's racing off, and the oil is going to get set aflame, and it's just this amazing action sequence. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
And it all comes. It's like, oh, this kid escapes, and then at the same time you get back, and you've got these soldiers drowning. The choice is drowning or burning alive.
Yeah.
And it's such a fucking amazing sequence. And I just think, even if I don't want to, I think I would want to watch it again.
Yeah.
Because it's not now, but not maybe now. In 5 years. Not now.
Well, it's also worth saying that, you know, it's not even really a choice between those two things. Because even if you decided to choose drowning, what would happen is, you'd go unconscious first, and then the natural buoyancy of your body would bring you to the surface, and then you'd burn while you were still alive. So it's sort of both, isn't it? It's kind of both.
It's the most
wonderful time of the year. when there's oil in the water and planes are exploding and people will die.
I don't know how he does, how he's done that, because it's horror, but very, very watchable and very, very stirring. Yeah. It's not depressing or dreary. He's really brought you to this point. I just think it is like unfathomably amazing filmmaking, and as a, yeah, it's kind of forgettable because it's not,
because who would want to remember that?
Who'd want to remember it? And also, just I think people have got the knives out for Nolan, and they're like, oh, Dunkirk. Why have you told it like that? Why have you told it? No, so over a week, over a day, over an hour. Why have you done that, Nolan? Just do it normal. And people just like, I think people wear it as a badge of honor to not like him. They think that makes them somehow intellectually superior, like they've won cinema. And all they've done is they've revealed themselves to be fucking thick and absolutely, like, have got no integrity at all.
Who,
like,
they are think, these people? I don't know any of them.
I don't mind people not liking a film. I don't like loads of films. Yeah. And I love slagging them off.
That is so true.
Love it. But I don't think that means that the film is bad or anyone who likes the film is bad. The people who don't like Sir Christopher Nolan and slag off his films, they think that puts a target on your back. But right, guess what?
Uh-huh.
Guess what?
It doesn't?
Guess what? The target is on their backs.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When
yeah,
you point a finger at me, yeah, there are four pointing back at you.
There are four fingers?
Well, there's you include the thumb in that for some reason.
That would be five.
No, because there's one pointing at you. When you point a finger at me, you're pointing your finger at me.
Oh, because of how the hand is shaped. Well, generally speaking, when people point, though, their thumb is actually pointing forwards, and it's just the three fingers pointing backwards.
That's not what the figure of speech is.
What about, can I improve the figure of speech and say, when you point a finger at me, there's three fingers pointing back at you and a thumb pointing in a random direction.
Yeah, yeah, that is better. I might have just got it wrong. But, I mean, if I feel touchy, if I seem touchy about Nolan...
If you feel touchy...
Guess what? I am.
Right.
Because I feel like he very much sits in my heart.
Yeah.
And when people are coming after... And when people come after me in general, I mean, they're not even coming after me. People aren't even coming after Christopher Nolan.
Not really. That's what I was going to say. I feel like you've imagined people who are out there who are pointing at Christopher Nolan with three fingers pointing at themselves, you know?
I think they could, but they are. It does. Do you know what?
Do you know what it was? I think people were pointing at superhero movies. And when he made the superhero movies that he took very seriously and were very serious superhero movies, there was a brief period in the 2000s where it was cool for cool people to say, why take them so seriously if they're superhero movies? It's just ridiculous. They're comic book movies, you know? And then they moved on from it because that was patently silly, because those films are really, really good and well made. And even if they're not for you, that's fine, because they're just great films and everyone likes them, you know? But I feel like it's been a long old time since anyone's pointed at Christopher Nolan and said, he's not good. I mean, Oppenheimer did clean up at the Oscars, and everyone kind of accepts that this guy is one of the great film directors, don't you think? Do you think, is it possible that, like your love for Block Party, you're just holding on to something from the early 2000s?
I think that... people who are talking about Sir Christopher Nolan now haven't even seen all his movies.
Sure.
So even people who loved Oppenheimer, you'd go, oh yeah, what about Following? And they'd go, what's that?
What is that?
You know, well, that's his first film, isn't it?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
But what about Memento? Oh, I don't know, what's that? Insomnia?
I don't know,
what's that?
Never
Prestige?
Seen Insomnia.
Don't know, what's that?
Yeah, it's fine.
You what?
What?
Listen, I'm listing the best movies.
Yeah. I want to do Nolan.
Yeah, okay.
I have one more nice thing to say about the film, very briefly, and then let's just dive right into Nolan, okay? Here's the nice thing. In a film that has some patchy acting performances.
Patchy.
patchy, and I'm thinking, and at least one character that isn't particularly likable and doesn't really pay off. I'm talking about you, Ken Branagh. You can practically see home from here, chaps.
You say that every fucking time. Every time I say Nolan, you just say that.
You can practically see home from here. He doesn't even say that. I don't like that bit. That feels a little bit too sweet. Sickly sweet.
I just wouldn't put Ken Branagh in a movie, but he puts him in Dunkirk and then he's like, oh, I like him. I'm going to put him in Tenet.
Yeah, it's weird when people put Ken Branagh in movies.
Yeah, he disappeared and then he stuck around and he came back and I don't know how.
He's a huge figure, isn't he?
He's Hamlet.
He's Hamlet. But also, isn't he just absolutely enormous in British cinema? There's something like, he has this kind of, this status that...
He's a lovey.
He's a lovey.
He is the uber lovey.
You can practically see the vagina from here. What, sir? I mean, Dover.
Come on, though. He's pretty good as Sir Gilderoy Lockhart.
Yeah, you know.
Is he sir? Is he a sir in that?
I don't think he's a sir. He's just Gilderoy Lockhart. I don't think they have sirs in the Wizarding World, because in the Wizarding World, they understand the value of structural equalization of society. And they wouldn't. They might say, hey, I'm the minister for magic. But also when you are that
hierarchy,
but they give you a name like Fudge, so that sort of balances it out automatically, doesn't it?
Don't call JK they. She's she. That's a good joke, mate.
Anything off the trolley, dears?
Anyway, what I was saying was, in a film with some patchy acting performances...
Yeah.
Jürgen Prochnow, I won't do it again. I have to say, I think it's one of Tom Hardy's better films, better performances.
Because he's just doing the job.
He's covered his face up and he's behaving like a human being. Don't like about him in Mad Max... You know, that's the thing. I love Tom Hardy when he does this thing where he says very little and where he gives an expressive facial performance, even when hidden behind a mask. I think there's the best acting bit in this film is the moment where Tom Hardy, who is flying an RAF Spitfire and who has earlier in the film had his fuel gauge knocked by a bullet, so he can't see how much fuel he's got left. He was writing down in chalk on his dashboard how much fuel his other pilot friend in a different plane had, so he could kind of do the maths in his head and work out how long he had before he had to return to England to refuel or to go back home, right? And there's a moment where he's just been in a firefight, his friends have crashed, he's the only plane left, he's worked out in his head he's got just enough fuel to get home, and in his rear view mirror... he sees a bomber heading for a boat of English soldiers. The decision that he makes is, it's brilliant, Adam. It's so good. There's moments of stress. There's moments of convulsion. There's the physical element first, and then there's this calm. And there's this, he just holds it in this pause for a good 6-7 seconds before he decides to turn around. It's the best acting in the film. And it's a really good reminder that when he's on form, Tom Hardy is so watchable. Like, he makes this film so much better. I think it's one of his better performances, and I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, because you can't see his face. He doesn't do that in Fury Road.
I think he does that in Fury Road.
He doesn't do anything in Fury Road. Look, I'm going to rewatch Fury Road.
I think you're going to have
God's sake.
Because you loved Furiosa.
Look, Furiosa. I rewatch every time I rewatch Fury Road. I like it a little bit more, and I will like it a little bit more again.
He's so good.
No. Yeah, he is, and that's why he's such a disappointment to me.
Hello?
Hello, Tom.
Speaking. Who's this?
Oh, sorry. It's your dad, Tom.
Oh. Hi, Daddy.
How's it going?
Good, thanks, Daddy. How are you?
Good, Tom. I just wanted to say I saw you in Dunkirk and I thought you were phenomenal.
Oh, right.
Absolutely owned it. Like, I couldn't see your face, but I just knew you were there, and there was so much emotion in those eyes of yours, and like, you know, you did it with Bane as well. So
wow, yeah, thanks. I mean, I did try really, really hard.
It didn't look like it looked effortless. It looked like you
oh,
were
great.
Just
yeah. I like the you know, it's, I wish sometimes I didn't have to wear the mask, because it's harder to act with just your eyes than it is with your whole face. And they didn't, Sir Christopher didn't give me that many lines in the film, so actually it's quite a difficult balance. They've someone told me it was the longest screen time records with the fewest lines in the films this year, Dad. So you know, I thought I did a good job without that much to go on. You know, so glad you saw that.
No, it's good. I mean, I've started with a compliment though, Tom, because also
right,
I feel like elsewhere,
you're
trying, well, you're in that, a lot of other films, basically every other film you've been in, you've really let me down.
What?
And you've really let yourself down, because it's like you're kind of this bug-eyed, crazy madman, like in that Venom movie, like you've got like an alien in you.
Venom hasn't come out yet, Dad.
You know, it has, you know.
No, it comes out next year.
No, but I'm watching Dunkirk on DVD,
Oh,
Tom.
You didn't even go to the cinema to see it?
No, I don't go to the cinema these days. It's
even when I'm in a film?
Yeah, no, sorry, son. It's scary out there, but I'm an old man.
Wait, but did you not see The Revenant? Because it was a really challenging film to make, and I thought you would like it, because I know that you have sort of spent some time in the wild, and I wanted to pay homage to that by being in The Revenant. You know, I did go for the Leo part, but they gave me the baddie.
Ask me anything, Tom, any other question, just don't ask me what I thought of you in The Revenant. Ask me why me and your mother divorced. You know, ask me, you know, why I wasn't there for you when you were a kid, but please don't ask me what I thought of you in The Revenant, because I don't want to.
Right.
I can't.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry.
To be honest with you, I can't believe you've called me to say this stuff. And I didn't even know that you had divorced Mum. I thought you were still together.
She thinks it, but we're not.
Right. So sorry, you're living together still.
I pop back and now and then, but you know what? While the cat's away, I'm living the dream, son.
What?
You know, when?
What are you doing?
I've left her, but she doesn't think I've left, and that's what all men want. I'm writing a screenplay about it. I'm writing a screenplay based on my story. It's called What Men Want, and it's about a man who's married. And he sneaks out every day and just does what he wants.
But then he comes home and his wife doesn't know that they're not really married. That sounds psychotic.
Sometimes he doesn't, and the wife never asks, and that's why...
What?
It's about what men want.
Is Mum there now?
No, because Mum never asks. And I call her Mum, even though she's my wife.
Hang on. Can I put you on hold for a second?
No, you can't.
Hold
honestly,
on.
I
call holding.
Hello, yeah, what do I press? Tom, what am I pressing?
Mum?
Hello?
Hello, Mum? Is that you, Mum?
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Mum.
What's that? What are you calling me? I'm up in the bedroom. I'm about to go to sleep. What's going on? Your father's downstairs. I thought you were having a having a chin work with your old man downstairs.
Dad's there, is he?
He's downstairs. Yeah, of course he is. He said I'm going to get on the old dog and bone, and I'm going to call Tom on the dog and bone, and I'm going to chat to him about his movies and what a disappointment he is to the family Hardy. And I said, you tell him, Jim.
What, didn't you try and stop him, Mum? I thought you would try and stop him from doing that. Anyway, that's not why I'm calling. I don't care what you think about my films. It's,
you say that now, Tom. You, Kate, when you, after Rock and Roller, you rang me up crying your eyes out going, have I done it, Mum? Have I done the business? Should I have signed up with Guy Ritchie? Crying your eyes out you were. And I said, you're good. You were good in that. You were good in that, Tom. I said, you can do the business.
No, I know, Ian. Thanks. I appreciate there was a difficult time for me. I thought after Layer Cake, I thought, yeah, let's do another one of these. But
don't mention me, Layer Cake. That Daniel Craig, he can go fuck himself. He can go shove it up his ass, can't he, Tom? On. You should be James Bond. I've always said it, Tom. You should be Mr. James Bond.
Right.
My name's James Bond. James Bond.
Okay, listen, Mum. I just want to ask you, I am on the phone with Dad as well. In fact, let me just ask you something. Dad says that you've separated. Is that true?
No. Your father comes and goes as he pleases, and I come and goes as I pleases. And that's what we do in the modern world.
What, so you have an open relationship?
I don't know what they call it these days, Tom, but what men want is they want to comes and goes and they pleases. And then what the thing is with men is they think they're getting what they want. But the joke's on them is because what I want is actually what women want. I want them to fuck off as well. And I gets all I likes.
Mum, you sound like Gollum. I don't understand what's happened. Why are you saying everything as a plural? Hang on. Let me just get... I need to just have this cleared up. So I'm just going to patch Dad through onto this call so that we can all speak together, okay? Hold on. Merge call. Dad, are you there?
Yeah, hello, son. What's going on?
Okay. Is that your... I've got Mum on the phone.
Jim, I'm on the line as well. Tom, what are you doing? Why have you got her on the line? I didn't want this.
Well, I think we just wanted to have it. It sounded like there was a bit of a challenging conversation that needed to happen, and I wanted to put you in a position to have it. Are you both aware that you're having an open relationship?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, Tom.
Right, but why did Dad tell me? No, hold on, Mum. Why did Dad tell me that you didn't know that he'd left you and that he was leaving the house doing what he wanted and coming back and you didn't know? If you knew, then what's this? Why is he saying that stuff to me? And why are you both saying my films are bad? Like, what's going on?
There's no surprise there, Tom, why we're saying your films are bad, because they're bad. And you are mugging it up like an absolute toilet. I likes your father to think... What he gets, what he wants. and as long as he's happy, then I'm happy. I get to go and have fun with the girls.
Right.
Isn't that right, Jim?
Oh, yeah, of course. It's cognitive dissonance, Tom. Cognitive dissonance. You could use it in your...
Right.
In your acting, you know, you think one thing and you behave another way. You've shattered the fun illusion I'd created.
Well, don't involve me in your sex games or plays, okay? I don't want any part in that dynamic.
You just put us on a merge call.
Hold on. This is as embarrassed as I've been having a conversation with you both since I brought you to the Oscars that time and you told everyone about how you met in the urinal. Hey Adam, do you want to play the "Hi, it's me, I'm Can You Beat Me, I'm Kevin Bacon" game?
Oh, would I ever. This game, I tell you what, you know, a little inside baseball thing. Mm-hmm. We record 2 weeks ahead, so the first time the listeners have heard this game has just dropped.
Ooh.
2 weeks ago.
What do they think of it?
Well, only the Big Ten... He said on Letterboxd, I love the 6 degrees game.
Yeah.
Got to do it every time now. Joe's a genius.
Oh, that's nice.
And then Darren Nolan, he said, he commented on, it's on The Descendants, I'd have put my house on you, and by you he means me, going truly, madly, deeply, Die Hard, 12 Monkeys, for the 6 Degrees game, yeah. Adam. I was shouting it in the car.
Oh.
However, I was not totally sure who Juliet Stevenson was until I looked it up when I got home. So that was me... That was me fucked.
He's right, though, because Jendo, my friend who listens, also texted me that day to say, to remind me about 12 Monkeys. I'd completely forgotten that Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis, thank you. I was going to say Bruce Wayne. That Brad Pitt and Bruce Willis had been in the same film, and it was 12 Monkeys. I was searching for that at the time, and I forgot about that. So nice shout, listeners.
Good shouts, guys. And yeah, it's a great game. It will be coming back every single week. It's a feature.
Okay, well, let me tell you, this week, here's your two actors that I want to hear the connection between. Okay? Olivia Colman and Jessica Chastain.
Oh, you're a little shit.
A devious little shit.
So this game, and really the game is all about the person who... lays the trap, and this is why you're a pristine top tier human being, because you know, Coleman to Chastain, this guy's playing 3D chess, everyone. Just pack up, go home. I can't think of Coleman in a movie, really. I know, and there is one. Beyond one movie, I can't really think of her in a movie that would unlock anything of any interest. Like, I know she was in that Netflix thing, The Lost Daughter or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think there's anyone huge in that. I know, but it's directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal, so that's Gyllenhaal. That's no...
Gyllenhaal. And a little reminder for listeners that the inversion on our game is twofold. The first... is that Adam has to beat me. He doesn't have to find the absolute quickest route, which we will discover at the end of the game through the use of the Oracle of Bacon website. He has to beat me, and he doesn't know how many I've taken. And the second inversion is that somewhere on our line has to be
a film. Fuck, I forgot that one.
Yeah, it has to be a film that we've covered on the podcast. Tricky, tricky.
I'm going to show my working now.
Ooh, okay, here we go.
It's got to be Pitt. I've got to get via Pitt, because Pitt is in the Tree of Life with Chastain.
Okay, yeah.
And Pitt has been in Fury, he's been in World War Z, and he's been in Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
So you're starting with Chastain, and you're using Pitt as your go-between.
He has to be.
Yeah.
So I'm going to... Yeah, I'd start with Chastain in Tree of Life.
Yep. Through Pitt... into?
Through Pitt into. And I've got Coleman. The only thing I can work with from Coleman is Paddington 3.
Right.
That's all I've got for Coleman.
Right. That's troubling. Because I don't know if I should remind you of this, but Coleman has been in a film that we've covered.
No, she hasn't.
Yes, she has. I know you don't like to be helped when we play games, but we've featured Coleman on this show.
Coleman's mustard.
And she hits the back of your nose just as much as the Norwich sauce does. Is mustard a sauce? A garnish? More of a garnish, isn't it, I suppose? I hated the film. That might help you. This seems silly, I'm just going to tell you, but Coleman's in The Lobster.
She is in The Lobster.
She is. She's the hotel manager in The Lobster.
Well, I don't know why you've told me that, because that's like a game changer. I've written Idris Elba down. I don't know why I've written Idris Elba down.
Why have you written Idris Elba down?
I don't know.
Is he in a film with Pitt?
I don't think he is. I don't know why I've put Idris Elba down.
That's confusing.
Oh, I know why he's put down. He put him down because he stars in a film with Jessica Chastain. Ah, he's in Molly's Game.
Yes, he is.
Vice, Farrell, Elba... Pitt.
I know we're going to tidy this up in the edit, but I personally, I'm loving how long it's taking you. It's so tricky, this game. It's really hard.
my mind is set
okay
on Bradley Pitts or Sean Penn for Tree of Life. That's how I want to get to, or Idris Elba.
Yeah.
It's just whether Vice or Farrell can get me there in, and I need them there in one.
I wonder if we should introduce a time limit to the game.
I think we should.
Because it might force you into just like taking a longer route. Because the reason you're taking so long is because you're trying to do it in one, right? Like you're trying to find one connecting film between these two.
I'll do the long roundabout. I'll get there when I get there.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it will just take all day.
Yeah.
All right. I'm operating on the intuitive, I'm not trying to beat you, I'm just trying to be intuitive.
Sure.
Route.
I love it. Points for creative routes as well.
I'm going to stick to my Paddington 3 and I'm not going to take your lobster.
Okay.
Just to be pure, if we're going to go my route, Paddington 3, Coleman, okay, which stars Antonio Banderas.
Oh.
And we've got Antonio Banderas, who stars in... Let's say he stars... Oh, okay. Yeah, he stars with Salma Hayek in Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
No, he doesn't. Desperado. He stars with... he's in Desperado with Salma Hayek.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we've got Salma Hayek.
Yeah.
Salma Hayek is in Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes, she is.
With George Clooney.
Oh, I can feel it. I know where it's happening now. I know where it's going now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clooney's with Pitt.
Clooney, we've got George Clooney with Bradley Pitts in Oceans.
Uh-huh.
And then we've got Bradley Pitts in Tree of Life.
Beautiful. That's a nice route.
That's not me with an hour.
Sure.
I think that's how the game needs to work.
And which of those films did we cover? Now, unfortunately, this week you didn't manage to get a film in that we'd covered. But that's fine. That's fine. And I think next week we're going to review the rules of the game to make sure that it's even more fun. Okay? But I can tell you that not quite off the top of my head, because I did have a while to think about this before the podcast started, so I've had a bit more of a runway than you. I've done it with a film that we've covered in three.
Wow.
Do you want to hear my route?
I'd love to.
Okay, here's my
route. I just can't think of anything that Coleman's been beyond Paddington 3.
Then I'm going to save Coleman for the end, because I haven't seen the film that she's in with the person that she's in it with, but I have seen the trailer and I thought it looked horrendous, and she's in the trailer. Okay? So starting with Jessica Chastain, she's in, of course, with Oscar Isaac, the film A Most Violent Year.
Oh, yes.
And Oscar Isaac is in Dune with little Timmy Chalamet.
Oh, yeah.
Timmy. And little Timmy Chalamet is in a movie called Wonka with Olivia Colman and a bunch of other English actors.
Yes.
Which I haven't seen.
That was circling at the back of my mind. I was like, Wonka? Chalamet?
Chalamet Wonka?
Wonka.
Chalamet Wonka.
Yeah, that's the way.
Now, let me open up the Oracle of Bacon and tell you the absolute quickest route without obviously having to find a connector. An Oracle of Bacon tells us that the official number, the Bacon number, is 2. Jessica Chastain, of course, was in Zero Dark Thirty with John Barrowman.
And what's he in with Coleman?
A film called The Five-ish Doctors Reboot.
No. You see, this is nonsense. Like, that fucking thing can go fuck itself. It's 3.
Shut up, Bacon.
So, I don't think we're even going to get to talk about Christopher Nolan.
What? Sir Christopher, I think you mean.
Sir Christopher. Dunkirk.
Yeah. Dunkey Koiki.
Is.
Dunkey Oki.
Is structured across 3 timelines.
Yeah.
Part one is the mole, which is over a week. And the mole is that big bit of jutting of land where the boats are going to launch off. Then you've got the something else. Part two is a day.
Yeah.
A day. That's Mark Rylance in his boat, called something else.
Coming across the channel to save the good English boys.
Yeah, and then you've got Tom Hardy in a plane, and that's over an hour. Lovely. What a lovely way to frame a story that you feel like you know, and you see moments in one of the timelines that are alluded to, and then in the other timeline, when you're actually in that moment, you're like, oh, yes, I'm now in that moment. It's happening
now.
Yeah,
I know where I am again.
This was sort of like in the background almost when Tom Hardy was in his plane. It's time is relative. You know, when you're trying to escape the Nazis,
yeah,
time really fucking drags. Ugh.
Oh my God.
Oh. Yeah. But then when you're in a plane for an hour, feels like it would last for a week. You'd be so intense.
That's true.
And
although Tom Hardy, very calm in the plane.
Very calm. It works, that. It just feels like a really great way to tell a story, but also particularly a war story, which is all just, they're also very hacky and standard, and you feel like you're watching something. But I just feel like Nolan, because he's a bit tricksy with structure in story, it's like it's become a little thing to take the piss out of him.
Right, we're back to that.
We are back to that. I just...
The finger pointers,
because they do. They're like, oh, you're going to tell a story backwards. You're always banging on about Memento and ragging on it and like...
I never rag on it for the structure.
Okay.
I think it's boring. That's it. Oh. I think it's an interesting way to tell a story, but it's not interesting to me. I just think it's, quote, interesting. And I'm happy that someone's done it and tried it. I just don't care that much about it, right? Whereas with this, the structure of this one, I totally see the value in it, and I was interested in it. And also, there's no requirement with this structure. It's not an affront, okay? Memento, not calling Memento an affront, I'm simply saying that there is no way to watch that film without the structure playing a massive, massive part in your watching of it, okay? You are watching scenes backwards. It is impossible to avoid that when you're watching Memento. In Dunkirk, that all that this really is a clever, smart tweak to timelines in order to have arcs play out alongside each other so that you don't have people, the very same people, by the way, who say that they think it's too overly done or over clever or whatever, to leave the cinema saying, hang on a second, what, he was in the air in that plane for the whole time it took for the little boat to get across the channel? That doesn't make very much sense, you know? Fine, great, so shift the timelines a bit, run them alongside each other, enable everyone to have experience their character arc at the same time, and realise that, you know, time isn't really that linear anyway, and so it's all okay. And that solves your problem of douchebags leaving the cinema and complaining that it didn't make any sense, you know? They're the same people. I agree with you about that. It's those people. And those people, I wish that they were burned alive in the oil in the sea.
hang on, give me 5 seconds. I'm coming right back and we'll pick up on that.
I'm coming right back, I'm going to pick up on that. If you give me some time, I'm going to pick up on that. If you give me a little time, I'm going to talk about that. If you listen to me now, I'm going to talk about that. Hey, if you give me a bit of time, I'm going to talk about that.
What do you really think about Sir Christopher Nolan, though?
What do I really think about Sir Christopher Nolan?
Yeah.
What, overall?
The greatest filmmaker of all time who hasn't made a shit film. What do you really think about him?
Greatest filmmaker of all time?
No. Well, yeah, he's up there, actually. Yeah, he's up there.
Sure.
Don't sure me. He's up there.
No, I'm saying he's up there. I agree with you that he's up there.
There's not a fucking shit film in his locker. Tarantino, he's got shit films up the yin-yang.
That's true. That is true.
Stanley Kubrick. Eyes Wide Shut. Fuck off, mate. 2001. Yeah. Get fucked, mate. Have a laugh. Peter Jackson. Try every film you've ever made, mate.
Oh, come. Well, all right, Ricky Gervais. No, Jesus Christ. Okay.
Right. Sorry.
The Hobbit. I'll give you The Hobbit films.
Oh, The Hobbit 3. All
I
three
thought King
of
Kong
them.
Was good. I liked King Kong.
Braindead is an absolute masterpiece. I love Peter Jackson. I just wish he'd go back to making real movies for real people and not weird little Hobbit movies about stupid little losers.
Listen, don't rile me. Stop riling me. I'll give you hit rate, ratio hit rate. Nolan
ratio
is definitely up there in the ratio hit rate game, okay? The man doesn't really make bad films. I completely agree with you. Amongst his repertoire, I would say, and I know that you would include Memento, I would say that The Prestige, The Dark Knight, Inception, I don't think Interstellar, but you might, and Oppenheimer, I believe, are amongst the greatest films of the 21st century. And it's a pretty incredible
hit. Add Interstellar to that list. It's a fucking masterpiece.
Personally, Interstellar is the weak link for me in the Nolan hierarchy, and I think you can
That's
see
like me saying personally 2001 is rubbish.
That is
no
not
one,
the same
no
thing.
No one listens
That's
to
absolute
me.
Absolute nonsense.
It is. No one listens to me on that, and no one's going to listen to you talking
I don't
about
mind.
Interstellar.
It's fine.
It's
Let,
a
just
masterpiece.
Hear me out. Let me say my
okay,
piece.
Sorry.
Okay, I know you like Interstellar. I think it's hacky, corny. It's a very good film, but it's hacky and corny, and it's nowhere near as good as a lot of his other movies. And I think if you look at the bleakness and the coldness of Dunkirk, the sort of clinical, surgical nature of Tenet, and then the sort of the very interesting interwoven narratives of Oppenheimer, Sir Christopher Nolan agrees with me, and he stepped back from the brink, from the corny brink, okay? He was edging closer and closer to the corny brink. He got to the corny brink with Interstellar, and then he stepped back from the corny brink and he's better for it. That's what I think. I think it's a very good film, but it's miscasting all over the place in that film, and it's the actors that ruin it for him, because otherwise it's quite a good fun story.
Wrong. Well,
that's what wrong. I believe. That's what I believe.
The bell that you can hear ringing is the wrong bell, and it's ringing in your ears.
It doesn't sound anything like a bell. It just sounds like a bell end.
There's a cunt alarm ringing, and it's saying,
cunt, cunt, cunt.
Okay. So, yeah, good. Well, yeah, agreed.
Agreed. Sort of, yeah. I do think Interstellar sucks, though.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
Is it time for the box office game?
I think it might be time for the box office game, you know. And this is a fun one. Dunkirk, of course, 2017. Dung Quixote. I mean, of course, we know that this movie was released in the month of July 21st.
Blockbuster season.
First off, though, I'm going to be asking you for a brackets estimated budget. What do you think with a movie like this?
Well, I mean, the logistics, the money is all on screen. The people, the ships, the planes.
It's all very real and palpable, isn't it?
You could go to war on this money.
Yep. Well, actually, I think no, but then wars are just very, very expensive.
Sorry, I misspoke. I don't know anything about war. But at this point, Nolan can say to Warner Brothers, if it was Warner Brothers, I don't know. I think he fell out with them at some point. Whoever it is, he can say, I'm going to make this movie. And they just open up the checkbook and say, give us a number. And he's going to say, can I have $100 million?
Yeah.
And that's what he asks for. Can he ask for $100 million?
I think he can.
Yeah, so that's what he says.
And does he get it?
I don't know. You tell me.
He does get it. Estimated $100 million.
It's a bingo.
Well, listen, you put yourself in the shoes of Sir Christopher there. You donned a knighthood just to see how it would feel. And then as soon as you were anointed a knight of the realm, you immediately guessed a number, money number answer, completely accurately. And that's why the aristocrats should still be in charge.
Don't try and diminish my victory.
No, I'm not. I'm simply saying,
don't try and guide me on the next bit.
Okay, fine.
I'm surprised you didn't say, are you sure? Are you sure
no,
about
I,
that
I don't
number?
Do that.
Are you sure about 100? Are you sure? Oh, today's been very much about you loving Christopher Nolan. Maybe you love him too much. Maybe you should love him a little bit
Listen,
less.
I've no interest in talking to Tom Hardy's mother, okay? I'm talking to Adam Richmond. So, 100 million budget. What do you think this baby's taken home day one, two, three, four, and five? Because the weekends are long, aren't they?
Yeah, no, they are. It's a real shame we can't include all the chat we just had about what it's like to watch a movie in America, because I really enjoyed that.
No, we can't include that because it accidentally sounded like something I didn't mean it to sound like.
Yeah.
And I can't even include this bit because then it's basically just saying the same thing. No, it's a real shame, isn't it? Because it's such a fun... We had such a great geographical chat there.
Well, I got to really slag on Lord of the Rings again, and now we've lost it.
And that's why we've lost it, because I won't have that being published on my channel.
Is Dunkirk, does it do jumper money?
And no, jumper money was 27, I think.
Shut up.
I'm reminding the audience. Fuck.
Oh, fuck's sake. If you don't listen, audience, if you don't know what jumper territory means...
What if they're new listeners who haven't listened before?
The clue is in the vernacular. If I say jumper territory, anyone who wants to do their homework can go back to the jumper episode and find out what jumper territory is. If I want you to chime in and go, for those who haven't... if you're joining late, go back to the beginning and catch up. There are so many in-jokes. There is so much mythology. It's the Lord of the Rings writ large. All right? Why are you spoon-feeding these fuckers?
So what was it, 27 again? Something like that. Jump.
Because it feels like now, then I... Because I didn't know it was specifically 27.
Well, how do you not know? I say it every time you say it.
Because I just know it's jumper territory. Jumper territory is so evocative.
I know, it's just that jumper territory could mean, is this game so bad that I want to jump off the top of a building? You know, jumper territory could mean, is this game so bad that I want to parachute out of a plane? Because to land on the floor where this game isn't happening, jumper territory. Do you know what I'm saying?
Imagine if this isn't Jumper territory, because it's a shit film. It just feels like it's exactly...
It's not a shit film.
Jumper? Horrible film.
Oh, Jumper. Right. I thought you were saying Dunkirk is a shit film.
No, Dunkirk's a phenomenal movie. But does it get American bums on seats? Do they want to see this flick?
It's very hard for me not to help you when you ask rhetorical questions, because I'm so desperate to help answer them in a sort of... You know, a kind of cloaked way.
I think by the time this comes out, the Americans are familiar with Sir Christopher Nolan. Uh-huh. And they are like, maybe they're like, okay, yeah.
Oh. They loved Interstellar.
Did they?
The Americans. Everyone loves Interstellar apart from me.
I don't think Americans loved it.
I think they did.
I don't think they did. Okay, I know it did well, but I don't think they loved it. I think they pretended to love it. But I don't think they got it or understood it on any real level.
All right, come on, guess.
Okay, guess. 35 million.
50 million.
Oh, mate! The fucking Yanks love it. They came in late. They arrived late to the war. They've arrived late to the Dunkirk party. They've turned up finally.
They've turned up on opening weekend.
Yes, they've arrived late.
They've arrived late on opening weekend.
The Yanks have turned up finally. Thanks for saving us.
That kind of thing. Incidentally, if you want to know, Interstellar did 47 million on its opening weekend.
Yeah, they didn't get that either.
And Inception did 63 million on its opening weekend. So it's long since Nolan broke America, my friend. This guy, he can open.
No, I know he can. I just don't think they understand.
Just helping you.
You know,
helping you.
They'll turn up and they don't get it.
All right, gross worldwide.
$690 million.
Okay, so you've worked that out by saying it is a 10x of the opening weekend.
I didn't do 10x at all. I don't respect that rule. I didn't do 10x today. Mm-hmm. I just felt something and I said something.
Okay, well let me remind you: the opening weekend was $50 million. The gross worldwide was $530 million.
500 and what?
$33 million.
And you're going to say it's exactly performing to its XG.
I'm not saying anything. I'm simply giving you information. That's all.
I think that absolutely ruins your theory. Mm-hmm. Because this film is far should outperform what you think.
I don't
the
think
XG
it should
is.
At all. I think there's a reason this is the only Nolan film that is appearing on the Movies You Forgot podcast. Now, you and I might not be able to eloquently explain exactly why that is, but there's a feeling. There is a feeling. It doesn't rival Interstellar in terms of how much it touched people. It just doesn't. So I think it's a brilliant film. It doesn't live with you and stay with you in the same way that some of his others do, and therefore it performs exactly to its XG. It performs to its XG. And therefore, my rule, my guideline, by the way, which isn't a rule, so it can't be broken, is completely fine and intact, and you can absolutely get fucked. Oh, and I lovely. Didn't help you once.
No, you didn't. And that isn't that great? We whizzed through the game.
It took longer than ever.
Yeah, the only person who slowed the game down was me. Because it got to be me thinking about it and going, more of me, please. More of me. Shall we play the bit of the show where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot, with a view to catch out the other one on a movie they forgot, to do our next show?
I would like to. And it's my go this week, Adam. Right, I've got 5 opportunities to get you. And if I don't get you in one of these 5, then we're going to the communal list and we're going to pick something that our listeners have suggested is forgotten. Okay?
If you want to get on the communal list, email us at moviesyouforgot@gmail.com. We love seeing your emails. I'm getting on there more and more these days and I'm replying to the emails. I'm replying to those emails. Follow me at @errorofways on Letterboxd. I'd love it if you'd come over there and follow me and like my reviews, write reviews.
Like me.
No, seriously though, it's good fun.
Yeah.
And you know, and rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify.
Uh-huh.
As well.
Yes, please do that.
But yeah, so if Joe doesn't get me, like, just to re-explain, you know, your movie that you suggest could end up being the thing that we watch.
Yeah.
As long as it fits the movies you forgot vibe, okay? Don't send us shit films. It's not about shit films. It's forgot you forgots.
Dunkirk is a great example. An excellent film that just for some reason just slips and slides, doesn't it, out of your memory. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Here's the first of my 5. I'm going to hit you with Legends of the Fall.
Oh, Leaky Bucket, the Leaky Bucket Boy.
Have I tried to get you with this before?
Oh, Leaky Bucket Boy. Oh, I've said a number of times, I've never seen the film.
All right.
But it's a plum, it's good.
I'm deleting it off my list.
But then if you delete it,
I know, this is what happens.
Week,
I delete
you'll
it
just add
like,
it. You'll add
maybe
it back.
I'll put Legends of the Fall on the list.
I say that because I've done the same thing.
Listeners, I'm sure, will pull their hair out with us at times because I'm certain that we've said films, said no, and then said films again 17 weeks later and said yes without remembering.
Well, thankfully, no one's emailed us to call us on that very factor. No. But feel sure. free to complain about the interior.
Well, look, I feel at ease here because there's a couple on my list that I'm a little dirty ones that I know I can get you with. So I'm going to mess around a little bit before we get there. And next up, I'm going to say, because you brought it up recently in the Kevin Bacon game, Dogma.
Oh, fuck.
Is it?
It's a tough one. I love it as a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I was such a Kevin Smith kid.
Right. There's the whole regalia of Smith we can weave through.
I don't know whether I can let it... I'll let it through as a favour to you. Like, I...
What?
Well, like, there's no way I can really... I bought the T-shirt that Matt Damon wears in the movie.
Oh, so it's not a forget-you-forgot for you. Oh, that's fine. I thought it was.
It's close to me. It's close to me letting you have it, maybe for a bit of as a favour, just because it's been.
I don't need it.
Okay, fuck Dogma then. I just wanted to say
fuck Dogma. If you want to do it, we can. But I don't. I've got stuff I can get you on. So it's.
Have you forgot? You forgot it.
Yeah, put it on your list.
I'll put it on. I'll get you on.
You
it.
You get me on it, and I'll say yes to it as a favour to you. Right. Okay. Here's the next one. Now, how many have I got left? 3? Yeah, I got 3 left. Okay.
Tough.
Someone
tough.
Who I really don't want to watch. I'm also weaving through to pick films that I feel like watching in the next week. And that's why I'm going to say, this one's so dumb. It's so stupid. But I think there's a lot of room in it. It's The Book of Eli.
Never finished it.
Fair enough.
Which I would have mentioned on this podcast. You're close to the communal list, my friend.
Okay. Mm. 2 more.
This is where Joe starts to get where he starts to waver. He starts to panic and starts to reach for eggy.
I'm not
going to
say the titles I've got. I'm just going to say Worried It's a No, Too Much Leo. Worried I've said that one already. Don't want to watch it. Really sad, don't want to watch it. Really, really sad, don't want to watch it. Really, really, really sad, don't want to watch it, and I think you haven't seen it. Not interested, don't want to watch it. Fun politics, maybe do want to watch it.
Ides of March.
No, no, no. More music, maybe do want to watch it. Fun comedy, could watch that. That's actually maybe a good one. What's this, number four? Is this my number four?
I think you're on...
Yeah, it is. It's my number four. Right, I'm throwing this one in there as a number four. Night at the Museum.
You've never seen
Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller?
Never.
What the fuck? You've got children.
Yeah, and I'm not putting on that drivel.
I thought it was quite funny. It's got Robin Williams in it. And Owen Wilson. And someone else.
At some point.
Is it Ricky Gervais? Oh, yeah. Christ alive. All right, fine.
Ricky Gervais. Great. Let's pop that on.
Forget it. Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, you leave me no choice. You're going to have to watch this now. The Artist.
Fuck. Yeah, no, that's a full...
I think you're going to find it a delightful return.
It's pure plum.
I think it's a delightful film. I'm excited to watch it. And you know what? After the horror of this week, I'm excited to watch something a bit lighthearted.
Have you forgot... Joe, have you forgot you forgot it?
I would say, you know, it's sort of... I can't remember that much about it. I remember enjoying it. It's like Dogma for you.
It's a film where we're not going to get many lessons.
I don't know, man.
No one remembers this movie.
People remember it, man. I swear to God they do.
They don't. Absolutely, they do not.
I swear to God they do.
This film is dead.
Nah.
It's nothing.
I don't think
it
is.
This film is nothing.
I don't think it's dead.
No. Wrong.
I think it's not dead.
Wrong.